Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
Good afternoon to this terrible Tuesday here on Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your hostess with the mostest, the radio chick, Annie, along with my debonair, my so suave, my so handsome and slim co-host, Cool Mike. Good afternoon, Cool Mike.
Good afternoon, Annie. I think you threw it to me. Your mic is dubbing, so you want to tap that thing a good one. But good afternoon on this cold, 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 cold winter. And if you tell me how nice it is in South Carolina, I'm hanging up. Oh, good afternoon on this cold winter from Michigan. Oh, boy.
Is my mic a little bit better now?
No.
Just bear with me, folks. We have a little technical difficulty. Skype does not like me. Bear with me.
Well, of course. Skype says it's us. BTR says it's us. But we know one thing. It's BTR. Anyway, well, welcome, everyone. Certainly glad to have you here. And you know something? Beautiful Annie Ubelis, one of the co-founders of the Buford Tea Party, has set up us a website. We love you. Not all of you, but we want you to be our friend at that website. Annie will post the link in there. Also, Southern Sense is becoming real popular with my Facebook friends. So why aren't you our friend? Twitter, Spreaker, you can download us on iTunes. We are just everywhere. We're in Margaret Thatcher's automobile. We're in Michelle Obama's bedroom at times, probably getting tuned to the very lowest volume number, but we're everywhere, and we want to be your friends. So I will post the links to those other networking sites. And
remind them that we do have a new website up called southernsense.webs.com that is up in the chat room. And if people go on there, we have a contest for that song, My Name is America, by Todd Allen Herndon. They can sign up to win the autographed video DVD of that song. Wow.
Yeah. Also, I have a picture. It's kind of, it was sent to me several months ago, of our beautiful host getting ready to go to the Marine Ball. And I just got to post posting that picture, like, check out Annie. I want to share it with everybody and see what a fox she is.
Well, you gotta tell people that has to be about 25 or more years ago.
Well, you know, one thing that doesn't change, I bet a party with Marines 100 years ago, 80 years ago, 20 years ago, or even now, I'll bet you a party, they certainly know how to party.
And it's my ex-husband, not my current husband.
Wow. And, you know, best thing about military people in the club, not only do they spend a lot of money, but anytime you have a problem, you just ask, hey, can you take care of that over there? Next thing, somehow problems just halt right there. But anyway, I want to share it with everybody, and we are definitely glad you're here. You're much better on the telephone as well, Annie, just so much better. Today's guest, of course, Annie, Annie ought to be in baseball. You hit more grand slams, I'll tell you, in the radio business, is Bob Barr, who for many years, he and Newt, both from Georgia, I would, like, listen to them and try to pattern myself. I would record myself on the audio tape and, like, try to be have their speaking ability. So when Ann said, we're going to have Bob Barr, I'm like, oh, score.
Well, I also have to give a little plug here to Blog Talk Radio. I know they have the new website up and it's having technical difficulties. And because of that, I've ended up finding out ways of doing backup so I can still broadcast seamlessly, smoothly, like we just did just now. I will be on Amy Domestico's show. She is the Blog Talk technician that has a training show here on Blog Talk Radio, and that will be on this coming Wednesday from 1 to 2 o'clock. So when you look at the staff picks, you're probably going to see her show up, and I will be her guest.
Oh, look at this. Helena Troy over here. Everybody loves Anna. I'll bet you when your name comes up on BTR's caller ID, they're like, oh, Lord, look how... Oh, you're so smart, Annie. But either way, that also, for all of us who want to know a little bit more on BTR, and I mean, this is almost like Bill Gates. Maybe it's exaggerating, but it's almost like a training seminar Bill Gates can show you with Windows. I mean, BTR people know BTR. So if you really think about it, as confusing as it is, once you learn it, there's a lot of really simplified things in this new in the new way of doing business, at least for me. I've noticed several challenges that have been corrected with the new thing. Now we just need the telephone lines to get straight, but you know what?
Yeah, they are having difficulty between Skype and their website, so we will be discussing that, I'm sure.
I don't mean to slam the boss here, but how did you pull that score off?
Well, actually, I called in because I noticed a lot of problems on the new site, and I told them about the bugs I found. And I just very politely sent them a message, you know, saying, yeah, I this is what I like and this is what I don't like. This is the problems I see. These are the problems I'm having. And let's see what we can do to work around it. And they were very nice. You know, you get more with honey than you do with vinegar. And if you just put your life that way, you're going to get a lot more done.
So how come cops don't approach it that way? You get more with honey and vinegar. They never pull over and be like, good afternoon. I'm sorry, sir or madam. You were this or that. It's always license, registration, proof of insurance.
When I used to pull people over, they go, officer, why aren't you going after the real criminals? And my answer was, because the real criminal is probably standing on the corner waiting to see whether or not they can deal drugs or do whatever they're going to do. They're going to see whether or not I'm doing my job. If I am pulling you over because you are breaking the law, they know that I'm going to go after them if they break the law. So, you know, you start with the small guy and the big fish is going to walk away.
Okay. I yield myself to the Brooklyn Star there.
But we used to get where you would have some of the Hasidim would come through and they go, officer, just give me a scare. And says, well, boo, here is your scare and here is your ticket.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, anyway, let's get the show going because we're going to have Bob Barr calling in about 5 minutes. And to everyone that is listening in who is not familiar with this show, welcome aboard. I'm glad to see everyone here in the chat room. We do start off each show with a dedication to a fallen hero. And today's fallen hero is an Army sergeant. Tanner Stone Higgins was killed on April 12, 2012. In Logar Province, Afghanistan. And Mike, if you would pull up the Army mix, we'll get going.
It's playing.
Okay. Former Sulphur Springs and Yantis resident Tanner Stone Higgins, 23, was killed April 12, 2012, while conducting combat operations in Logar Province, Afghanistan. This is taken from the news telegram written by Faith Huffman and internet postings I have put together to do this dedication. Army Sergeant Higgins died of wounds sustained when enemy forces attacked his unit with small arms fire. He was assigned to the 1st Battalion, 75th Ranger Regiment from Hunter Army Airfield in Georgia. Sergeant Higgins was leading an assault against an enemy compound when he was mortally wounded by small arms fire. Sergeant Higgins epitomized the Ranger Fire Team leader and was admired and respected by everyone, said Colonel Michael Foster, the commander of the 75th Rangers. A skilled warrior who always led from the front, he's a hero to his family, 1st Ranger Battalion, and our nation. Our thoughts and prayers go out to the entire Higgins family. In the final hours of his life, Sergeant Higgins helped his strike force accomplish its missions against a determined enemy in Afghanistan, said Colonel Mark W. Odom, commander of the Ranger Regiment. Without reservation or hesitation, he carried the hopes of our nation, as he had done so many times before. Higgins, a 2007 Sulphur Springs High School graduate, was a member of the elite Army Rangers. He was the son of a former News Telegram feature writer, Patty Stone, Sells of Tybee Island, Georgia, and Danny R. Higgins of Hearst. He married Shelby Allen in October of 2011. She resides in Savannah, Georgia. Her brothers are Noah Sells of Tybee Island, Georgia, and Army Private Dylan Henniger, who is stationed at Fort Benning in Columbus, Georgia, and is currently prepared to enter the Ranger Indoctrination Program. Sergeant Higgins enlisted in the U.S. Army in October 2007, shortly after his graduation from high school. He was awarded $56,700 in a United States Army College Fund scholarship. Higgins completed one station unit training at Fort Benning, Georgia, as an infantryman. After graduating from basic airborne course there, he was assigned to the Ranger Assessment and Selection Program, also at Fort Benning. Higgins graduated from the Ranger Assessment and Selection Program and was then assigned to Company D, 1st Battalion, 75th Ranger Regiment in July of 2008, where he served as a rifleman, grenadier, automatic rifleman, gun team leader, and a ranger team leader. He was promoted to sergeant in July of 2010, according to a release in the Army News. This was Higgins' third deployment to Afghanistan. He also had deployed once to Iraq. Ranger school truly taught me what it is to be a man. It taught me I wasn't nearly as tough as I acted, but I was a lot tougher than I thought. It's a good feeling to be part of the best unit in the world, Higgins said in a May 2000 article about becoming a Ranger. His military education includes basic airborne course, Ranger Assessment and Selection Program, U.S. Army Ranger course, Emergency Medical Technician Basic Course, U.S. Army Sniper School, and was the Warrior Leader Course Distinguished Leadership Awardee. He had served as a rifleman, grenadier, automatic rifleman, gun team leader, and a ranger team leader. His awards and decorations included the Ranger Tab, the Combat Infantry Brigade Badge, the Parachutist Badge, the U.S. Army Expert Rifle Marksmanship Qualification Badge. Sergeant Higgins was also awarded the Joint Service Commendation Medal, Army Commendation Medal, Army Achievement Medal, Army Good Conduct Medal, National Defense Service Medal, Afghanistan Campaign Medal with 3 campaign stars, Iraq Campaign Medal with 1 campaign star, Global War on Terrorism Service Medal, Non-Commissioned Officer Professional Development Ribbon, Army Service Ribbon, and Overseas Service Ribbon. He was posthumously awarded the Bronze Star Medal, the Meritorious Service Medal, and Purple Heart. He is survived by his wife, Shelby Lynn Higgins, father Danny R. Higgins, mother Patty D. Sells, brothers Dylan Henninger, Hunter Higgins, Noah Sells, grandparents Gerald and Betty Higgins, and Glenn Roy and Martha Dickens. Army Rangers served as pallbearers at his funeral. The Patriot Guard riders lined the route with American flags and escorted Sergeant Higgins' body from Greenville Municipal Airport in Texas to the Betty Funeral Home in Winnsboro, Texas, then on to Lake Fort Baptist Church in Alba, Texas, and on to his final resting place at Cypress Cemetery. As a Ranger, Higgins selflessly lived his life for others and distinguished himself as a member of the Army's premier direct action raid force and fought valiantly as he served his fellow Rangers and our great nation, notes ArmyRanger.com. We do not know the day or the time of services, but they were held at Fort Lake Baptist, where just a few short months before they gathered at his and Shelby's wedding. This was noted on his Facebook page. The show is dedicated to Sergeant Higgins, all men and women who are serving and have served for our country and our freedoms. God bless them all. This is My Name is America by Todd Allen Herndon.
I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. When I'm attacked, I protect and defend. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is America, don't tread on me. I cannot be broken, I cannot be shamed. If you hurt me, I'll get stronger. And I'll rise up from the flames, and I'll always stand proud and free. I'm America, don't tread on me. America is my name. My strength was not taken from others, others gave it to me. They believe in the virtues I stand for, my respect for humanity. Now I'm challenged by tyrants who envy my power, but their vicious deeds become my finest hour. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is America, don't tread on me. I cannot be broken,
All right, that is Todd Allen Herndon. My name is America, and a reminder that on our website, southernsense.webs.com, we have an autographed copy of that video DVD of this song, My Name is America, up for a raffle. So go on to the website, join, and enter the raffle. Mike, we have a very special guest, and I'm honored to bring on board a former congressman from the great state of Georgia, just south of where I am, about maybe half an hour from where I am in beautiful Beaufort, South Carolina, and a former presidential candidate, Congressman Bob Barr. Good afternoon, sir.
Hi, and listen, it's great to be with you and your listeners.
Yeah, it is an honor to have you aboard.
Thank you.
And we got our co-host Cool Mike with us.
We're glad to have you, Mr. Barr. I will say I am a big fan of yours, and I was telling Annie several years ago when I first started getting the political bug, I used to listen to you on shows as well as Congressman Gingrich, and I used to pattern my speaking abilities after you two. Many of the interviews you gave, whether it's on Fox or on other networks, I always liked the fact you weren't afraid to go on any show. You were ready to talk the issues or debate the issues, even sometimes at a louder tone. But I'm a big fan, so thank you very much for joining.
Thank you. It's a real pleasure. I enjoy very much speaking with you all and other radio hosts across the country because it's extremely important for people to have benefit of your views as the hosts and what little I can bring to the equation so that people understand and can have a perspective that they don't often get on fundamentally important constitutional issues.
My first question to you is, as a Annie and I are very conservative and primarily Republican. Annie's a founder of a Tea Party. What the hell's happened to our party since, like, the mid-90s? It's almost as if we've gone to one party, a one-party system.
It's a real shame, and it reminds me and probably reminds all of us who are involved in this process just how important it is that we never, ever rest on our laurels. It is a constant battle to make sure that the Constitution remains front and center both in our communities as well as in Congress and at the halls of government at all levels. And a lot of times people think, well, they've gotten somebody good in office so they can sort of forget about it, put it on autopilot, and it'll take care of itself, or they accomplish a particular task. For example, when we finally balanced the federal budget for the first time in decades back in 1997, people said, well, we've done that, now we can move on to other things. Not so. It is a constant battle, and we've got to make sure that the people that we elect to office not only stay in office if they're doing the right thing, but that they constantly hear from us so that we can hold their feet to the fire. Even good people can get lazy up in Washington.
No, I agree with that. You know, they feel that they've reached a point in the road, and they're going to just keep on moving on, but they don't put the sentry there at that point. They don't leave a sentry there to make sure that accomplishment remains in place.
And there are constantly, the left is constantly doing that. They are constantly on the attack. They are constantly watching for weaknesses. They're, you know, the computer systems and the grassroots systems for invigorating people that the left has developed, and this president, President Obama in particular, have got to be met if we are going to maintain any hope of restoring the Constitution to its proper place in our communities and in families and in government in the years ahead. This last election, the Republican ticket at the national level was woefully inadequate as compared to the effort by MoveOn.org and the Obama administration to invigorate its people, to get people out to vote, and to keep them involved even after the election. The Republicans had better develop a system to do that, or, you know, the 2012 election is just going to be a small taste of what's going to come in the election cycles ahead.
Yeah, well, I found that the Obama group did was that when they went for the election originally, they left all the mechanism completely in place. You know, their campaign offices did not close down. Their mailings had not stopped. Their websites did not close down. But I'm finding that within a day after the election of 2012, the Republican campaign headquarters about a mile away from my house closed up. Everything shut down. As I'm saying, guards are not left in place.
This is a problem that I've noticed over the years, over the decades with the Republican Party, whether it's focusing on the youth movement or minority voters or whatnot. The focus will be on an election cycle, and then they sort of forget about it. This time, though, unfortunately, even though one of the problems was, and as you've indicated, the voting headquarters and the offices closed down immediately, we never even had the Republicans at the national level, the Romney campaign, and it's largely the fault of the Romney campaign this go-around, did not even have a computerized grassroots system to ensure that that precinct chairs and block chairs were able to get their people out to vote. So there was really nothing even to either close down or keep in place from a computer system standpoint, whereas the Obama effort, modeled after the MoveOn.org effort of several years ago, funded by George Soros, among others, just keeps right on chugging.
Yeah, that is a woeful shame. One of the things I find is one of your passions is the Second Amendment. And looking back at your bio and your background, you weren't always as strong, but now thankfully you are. You've come around. And we've got this new bill put in by DeLorio and I can't pronounce this other guy's name, Giavalla or something like that, H.R. 226. You know, our Second Amendment rights have been coming under such a huge attack. You know, where do we stand?
Well, thankfully, the Second Amendment is still there, despite efforts over the decades by the left and by the gun control folks to marginalize it and try and convince people that the Second Amendment has outlived long ago its usefulness. It's still there. And we do have, over the last few years, two extremely important Supreme Court decisions that I know you and your listeners are well aware of, the 2008 Heller decision, excuse me, out of Washington, D.C., and the 2010 McDonald decision out of the city of Chicago, that at least established the benchmark once and for all in Supreme Court litigation that the Second Amendment does indeed protect an individual pre-given individual right to keep and bear arms, and that local and state governments cannot so limit that right to keep and bear arms that they do away with it altogether. Now, that at least is the basis on which we can move forward. There is another excellent decision that just came out of a federal appellate court in Illinois, written by a Judge Posner. That is an excellent one, and it takes to task the state of Illinois, which is the only state in the union that has an absolute statewide ban on carry outside of one's home. Judge Posner, writing for the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, which hopefully will now go to the Supreme Court to be upheld, declared that that law, that absolute statewide ban that they have in Illinois against carry, is utter nonsense and meaningless. So we've gotten some help recently from the federal courts, but you know that still leaves the door open for states like New York, which have recently, as a knee-jerk response to the Newtown, Connecticut shooting in December, have passed outrageous, draconian gun control measures. Other states are taking these up in Congress. Indeed, you know, folks like Nancy Pelosi on the House side, and of course Dianne Feinstein, a senator on the Senate side, are trying to reignite the gun control that went into place temporarily back in 1994, and they're going far beyond that. So we've got to watch this movement very, very carefully. Make sure that our representatives in the House and our senators understand the importance of standing up to these gun control measures that are going to be coming hot and heavy down the road.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, Missouri has a new one that the Democrats have proposed. which actually goes so far as to confiscate weapons people legally currently own.
We're seeing some very, very serious inroads. There was a piece of legislation, I think it may have been in California, Ann, but I'm not absolutely certain, you may know for sure, that was proposed, and then after it came to light, the proponents, the state senators, said, oh, we didn't really mean that, in which a provision in the proposed legislation would provide for local law enforcement every year to come without a warrant into a person's home to make sure that the so-called assault weapon that they had registered with the state was being secured, was being stored properly under penalty of criminal sanctions if they didn't. I mean, just absolutely outrageous, some of the stuff that we're seeing proposed. And if it weren't for folks like yourself in the real media drawing attention to this, and grassroots organizations like the Tea Party, the NRA, the Citizens' Right to Keep and Bear Arms groups, and so forth, paying close attention to this, this stuff will start slipping through the cracks.
Yeah, the California law that you're talking about is that the Dems, they rolled out this massive gun control package that has strict ammunition regulations, even allows the potential confiscation of 166,000 legally registered semi-automatic rifles. All semi-automatic rifles with detachable magazines would be banned. All guns would be registered, and gun owners would need a special permit just to buy ammunition.
And, we're going to see more and more of these things. And here again, I mean, this nonsense that these legislators, I think it was out in California that had proposed this this home inspection proposal. You know, they said, oh, gee, we're sorry, we didn't really mean that. That's nonsense. You know, these are smart folks. They know exactly what they're doing. They're trying to slip this stuff in so that people don't notice it and it can get enacted. That's why every one of these bills has to be very, very carefully scrutinized, and the public needs to be aware of it.
Missouri makes it a Class C felony to manufacture, import, possess, purchase, sell, or transfer any assault weapon or large capacity magazine. The simple, you know, possession of a magazine suddenly becomes a felony.
Exactly, as if the capacity of a magazine is going to trigger somebody to commit heinous acts, like this fellow Lanza or whatever his name was up in Newtown, and as if limiting the capacity of a magazine to 7 or 10 rounds is going to make a difference if somebody is intent on using a firearm with a detachable magazine. It takes some people less than 1 second to drop and reinsert a different magazine, or to take one out and turn it over because it's taped together with another magazine. I mean, these things are just nonsense in terms of any realistic or rational effect on people who are intent on doing harm with a firearm, as if that were even the legitimate criteria to begin with.
Wow. Now, we do have a caller, if you don't mind. We can bring this person on. Tried the second time. Let me bring this individual on. Area code 478, you're on the air live with Southern Sense. You have a question for the congressman.
Hey, yeah, this is Ron Schwartz with the Hard Georgia Tea Party Patriots in Dublin, Georgia.
Yeah, Ron Schwartz is another fellow Tea Partier.
Yeah, I'm from Dublin, Georgia, and I have a lot of respect for Mr. Barr, and I'm just wondering what he thinks we can do with the executive order part of Obama's policies, and then where he thinks we'll actually end up in the state of Georgia with the new bills that are up there now, HB 2829 and 101, which would have recognized all the other state permits, and they're fighting that, believe it or not, and it primarily doesn't open it up for South Carolina, so they're afraid that they won't reciprocate. So I just wonder where his views are on that. It's kind of a local and a federal issue.
Thank you, Ron, very much for listening to the show and for participating. One of the issues that I think is very appropriate for Congress to consider, and I would love to see it passed, although clearly this particular president would not sign it into law, but would be a national reciprocity for a concealed carry permit. If, in fact, as we know it is, and as the Supreme Court since 2008 has agreed with us, the Second Amendment guarantees a God-given right to keep and bear arms for self-defense, then it makes no sense to say, well, you can maintain a firearm for self-defense on your person in one state but not another. Either it is a God-given right or it is not. And insofar as the court has recognized that it is, then it seems to me entirely logical and appropriate to have a national reciprocity for carry permits. So, one, I would like to see that, and that would, of course, take care of the various restrictions in some states or absolute restrictions like they have in Illinois. With regard to the specific pieces of legislation pending in Georgia, I'm not aware of the particulars of them yet. They've just kind of gotten started. I'm not sure they've had hearings on them yet, but hopefully they'll pass some of those to build on what the legislature has done the last few years in recognizing a more robust carry right in Georgia as well. Finally, with regard to executive orders, even though the president did not issue any executive orders per se recently when he issued signed a bunch of documents with regard to firearms, these were presidential directives largely, I think. It is very, very important that we pay close attention to executive orders, which in recent decades have been used with distressing frequency far beyond what they are supposed to be. An executive order carries the force and effect of law, but it is intended to extend only within the executive branch for the administrative running of the executive branch. Yet more and more, presidents have used executive orders to effectuate policies generally in the country. So, and they need to be challenged in court because Congress has shown an unwillingness over the decades to challenge presidents on these executive orders. We need to challenge them in court when they go beyond, as they frequently do, go beyond the bounds of simply administering the executive branch. And with regard to firearms, that is particularly problematic.
Yeah, we have in that executive order he signed back on, I believe it was January 23rd, he has there where he wants them to approve the nomination of Todd B. Jones as the BATF director, because right now he's currently the acting director. But there's huge problems behind that nomination.
Well, one of the problems that we've had with ATF, and there are a number of them, but one of the problems we've had with ATF in recent years is that neither President Bush nor President Obama has really nominated and pushed for confirmation of a competent individual to head the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, and now they've tacked on explosives to the end of it, but you know, we all know it as ATF. It's important for an agency that carries as much power and wields as much power as ATF over such an important right as our Second Amendment right in this country. It's important to have clear direction for that agency where you don't have a permanent head, where you don't have a head confirmed by the Senate, which has been required for the head of ATF since 2006, then you have an agency that's adrift, that doesn't, where things like Fast and Furious can fall through the cracks and so forth. So both President Bush should have pushed for a good director of ATF. He didn't, unfortunately. Obama has not during his first term in office. So I'd like to see him at least nominate and push for somebody up there so we can have a set of good, solid hearings on not only who the director should be, but on the power wielded by ATF in the first place.
Yeah, well, the problem with the Todd Jones is, as the acting director, he's been in place during Fast and Furious, and instead of putting someone else in there that's not even connected remotely with Fast and Furious, he's insisting on this person that was in charge of it, now the acting become the complete director.
Well, hopefully the Senate will not just sit back and say, well, okay, since he's in there, we'll keep him in there. Hopefully they'll have some very vigorous oversight hearings if the name is sent forward and pushed, and we can get to the bottom of some of these issues, including Fast and Furious.
Yeah. Now, I got to say, Georgia, I mean, had I known you got a town like Kennesaw, I probably would have moved there, because that's the only town I know of that requires each head of the household to keep and maintain a firearm.
Kennesaw is a great town, and I teach constitutional policy at Kennesaw State University, which is right up in Kennesaw, which is just a little bit north northwest of the city of Atlanta. And since I forget whether it was 1980 or 81, but right around that time, they did pass an ordinance that requires each household to maintain a firearm. There are some exceptions, obviously. A person is, for religious reasons or whatnot. And to some extent, it's symbolic. I mean, they don't have police going into your homes to verify that you have a firearm. But it sent an important message, particularly at that time when some municipalities around the country were passing anti-gun ordinances.
Yeah. Now, today in the Washington Post, Kathleen Parker, and this is one woman that drives me absolutely up the wall, was attacking our great state of South Carolina here because there's certain issues that are being brought forth in the state legislature and Senate concerning the Second Amendment. And basically the laws that we have here that they're trying to push for basically are nullification laws. And they want to allow concealed weapons to be carried in bars and restaurants, provided that you're not drinking alcohol. I mean, that makes sense. I mean, how easy would it be for someone to go into a restaurant and just start spraying the place?
Well, South Carolina has a long history going back to the middle, as I recall my history, the middle of the 19th century, standing up for individual rights as against federal government power and the rights of states in certain areas as against federal power. So, this effort is very much in keeping with a long and proud history of standing up to improper government control and mandates by the state of South Carolina.
Yeah, now the only problem I have is that our Senator Lindsey Graham, who unfortunately I'm not one of his favorite people, is trying to propose strengthening the background checks, because we had recently an incident where Ashley Hall, where a woman went up there and attempted to shoot at the dean there, and no one put in her background check that she had a mental illness. But that also enters into another touchy area, especially where, you as a libertarian would appreciate, about privacy laws. How far do you go in pursuing information on a person's mental background?
There, it's a very, very good question. And there were sort of two aspects to this issue of the so-called mental illness or mental health disability for possessing a firearm. One is the privacy aspect, which is extremely important, and second is to ensure that however you incorporate into a state's laws notification and databasing of information regarding a person who has been found to suffer from mental illness, for example, that you incorporate into that system some due process for that person. So you don't have, for example, as we now have in New York State, as a result of its draconian gun control measures that were passed into law as a knee-jerk reaction to Newtown just a few weeks ago, you have a system whereby, based on essentially nothing more than just hearsay or secondhand information, a person who exhibits violent behavior in somebody's opinion will have their firearm, any firearms, confiscated immediately, and then the burden is on them to prove that they can get them back. That's not the proper way to do it. You have to have a proper system of due process so a person can defend themselves, and the burden should be on the government seeking to take away a person's constitutionally guaranteed rights. Now, with regard to privacy, here it's, you know, it's a very delicate balance. And after the Virginia Tech shooting a few years ago, the NRA actually worked with government and with some of the gun control groups to strengthen the mechanisms at the state and local government level to provide additional funding and reporting requirements and updated technology, so that once a person has properly been found to be suffering from mental illness or judgmentally incompetent, that and after you incorporate ways to ensure that there's due process in that, the information does get properly retained and is accessible, not necessarily to the general public, but to the government agencies and the court systems. But it is a very delicate balance that you put your finger on, Anne. Very important.
Yeah, which brings me now around to the UN treaty, the Small Arms Treaty. And unfortunately, our Senate right now is controlled by Democrats, and the fear is that it would be passed. But that would call for a international gun registry, and that scares the bejesus out of me.
The United Nations has been involved in this firearms control effort, this gun control effort, what they call small arms and light weapons, since the mid-1990s. As a matter of fact, if I recall properly, the very first international conference that I did attend to monitor this process was in probably about 1997 or so. And beginning in 2001, the UN has been very forcefully involved in trying to push for international control of small arms and light weapons, which is, in their parlance, means virtually all firearms. And under the Bush administration, and particularly John Bolton, both when he was the Undersecretary of State and then the U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, our government held the line very firmly against the U.N. effort in this regard. Since the Obama administration came in, that's changed 180 degrees, and the Obama administration has not strongly opposed the latest UN effort, which is to pass what they call an ATT, an arms trade treaty, that would, not directly, but indirectly, would very much get the United Nations involved in gun registration through supposedly trying to control and limit the international illicit trafficking in small arms and light weapons. But, of course, in order to do that, you need to know what's happening within each country. So that's how they sort of come in through the side door.
It's scary. Having UN treaties now become the law of our land rather than our laws being the supreme law of the land. And it's a very, very frightening trend.
Certainly is.
Man. Now, I know, Mike, you've got about half a dozen questions. And now, Mr. Barr, you've had some great articles also recently in Town Hall magazine, which I am a subscriber to. So I have been following you and your comments, and you've actually attacked Feinstein's proposal, which I thought the article was absolutely fantastic. Thank you.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate your reading townhall.com. It's an outstanding electronic news board, and they carry a lot of very, very timely and very solid pieces. And I try and, as I always have, try and focus primarily on the constitutional aspects of what Washington either is doing or should be doing.
Well, my co-host knows that I'm an old school. You're, Mr. Barr, just to not give away all the chips, you're only 1 year older than my husband, but I'm old school. I like the hard copy in my hand, so I get it delivered to my mailbox.
Good for you. I do, too. I always like having a hard copy of an article or a hard copy of a book.
All right, Mike, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
Oh, boy. You guys in the old school. But anyway, first of all, in today's lingo, your article regarding Big Sister wants power to seize and inspect laptops is what they call badass. Very great article. I'm actually posting that all over Facebook. This is something that can resonate to younger people who carry laptops or basically use things, do everything through their use of phone, A lot of times when we talk old school politics, things are over their head. They don't quite understand it. This is something they do understand. So I think that article is very well written. A question I have, I'm so frustrated. If a lot of this were taking place in the mid-90s, there would probably be an awful lot of politicians swinging from ropes about now. What in the hell has happened? It seems like Republicans are not even challenging. It just seems like it seems my congressman, Justin Amash, was kicked off the Budgetary Commission for, quote-unquote, not towing the party lines. It used to be when you fight the party, the Republicans love that. They love people who were leaders, who weren't just laying down. Now it appears that it's almost like a socialist party.
It goes back to what Ann and I were talking about at the very beginning of the segment here, and that is something happens to a lot of these folks when they get up to Washington, and particularly if it's important to them to work their way up through the leadership. They soften their views. They sort of put their constitutional understanding and constitutional principles on hold or on a back burner. And if we the people don't pay close attention and constantly hold their feet to the fire will go out. And you know, it was the same when I was up there back in the 90s, particularly when Newt was the speaker from January of 95 to January of 99. He pushed these issues, but he had a lot of younger folks. I was younger then, by the way. Younger folks, new members of Congress that went in with that huge wave back in the 1994 election, and we did. We held their feet to the fire. Unfortunately, a lot of them have forgotten that, and those embers have cooled. It's up to we back in the communities, through the Tea Party, through the local party, to make sure that that those flames are stoked again.
Do you see the Republican Party as a whole moving any more towards, say, the true conservative philosophies? Or do you see them still kind of playing in the middle in an attempt to get more members?
We're very much at a crossroads here. We saw the last national election with Romney, we saw a very muddled message, and now we see Karl Rove, for example, one of the big poobahs in the Republican consulting fraternity, saying, well, you know, we can't have these firebrands out there running for office as if that were the problem. We need to have an establishment vetting process or whatever they call it. If the party goes down that road, then we're going to continue to see a watering down of the message. If, in fact, we turn, as we're starting to a little bit, to some of the emerging younger leaders in the party with energy, with a strong constitutional foundation, and make sure that they get into positions to move the party and we have candidates to reflect those views, then I'm going to be optimistic. Right now, though, the jury is still out.
Well, you know, I got a little upbeat for you because just this past Saturday, I was up in North Charleston with all the other conservative groups and tea parties where we actually sat down and vetted every one of the candidates running for Tim Scott's seat for that Congress. Tim Scott, as everyone knows, was just appointed senator in place of Senator DeMint, who has retired to join Heritage. So we have 16 Republicans running for that seat. And we sat down and we vetted every last one of them. And I am happy to say, and we did it here first before anyone else, Ray Nash won it hands down. He had the highest score as the most conservative, with Governor Mark Sanford coming in second. And Ray Nash announced his candidacy for that seat while he was still serving in Afghanistan, calling into our show. So, you know, we are here at work and we're putting the feet to the fire.
Well, that is good that you're involved and people are involved in that process. You all have a very interesting primary or special election, I should say, coming up there with Mark and the other candidates. And is that the one with Ted Turner's son in it?
Oh, yes. And I'm happy to say Ted Turner was the bottom. He was at the bottom.
Yeah, very very interesting election up there. So would your speculation be that will you all have a runoff, or is it whoever gets the most votes the first go-round wins?
Well, I'm not exactly sure. I think if it comes very close within a certain percentage, it would end up being a runoff, because they do have, if I recall correctly, a date scheduled for a runoff of the primary. But we've got 16 Republican candidates running, three Democrats, one of whom is Colbert's sister, and two independent Libertarians. So we've got 21 people vying for that seat.
That's amazing. How did Colbert's sister do in the ranking?
Well, because she is a Democrat, she was not part of this group. But we had all 16 Republicans.
Oh, okay. It was just for the Republicans. Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mr. Bauer, I got a question for you. How did it come to pass? How did you get involved in politics to begin with? I mean, the very first time you thought, you know what, I should run for office, to right now.
Early in my career, I worked for a little agency in Washington called the CIA. I worked for the CIA for a number of years, including while I was going to law school at Georgetown in the evening. And as a staff member for the CIA, I was not able to engage in partisan politics. Obviously, I could vote, but partisan political activities were very circumscribed because of something called the Hatch Act. So when I moved to Georgia, I left the government, moved to Georgia in the late 1970s, I had a lot of pent-up political energy from having to sort of kept it under wraps while I was with the CIA. So when I moved down to Georgia, I immediately became very active in the local Republican Party and then the state Republican Party, secured an appointment by President Reagan to serve as the U.S. Attorney here in Atlanta, which I did, and from there became active in my congressional race. I ran first for the U.S. Senate in 92, lost in a close runoff, and then ran successfully in 1994 for the House.
Well, actually, you've got an interesting story, as I understood your bio, as to how you ended up becoming a member of the Republican Party, because as I understand, you were originally a Democrat, and someone in your family kind of like pushed you?
It wasn't that I was a Democrat. I did dabble in with the Democratic Party a little bit for one semester while I was out in college at Southern Cal before I really found my conservative Republican Libertarian roots. And then I became active with the Trojan Young Republicans and the Libertarian Club on campus. Read some of Ayn Rand's works, and we had a small Objectivist Society there. So that's what really solidified my conservative political philosophy in college, was becoming active with the local college Republicans called the Trojan Young Republicans and the Objectivist Society based on Ayn Rand's works.
All right. We've got another caller in on the line, area code 540. You're on the air live with Southern Sense. You have a question for the congressman. Area code 540. Hello?
Just come on to call late, and I'm appreciating and listening, but I don't have a comment. Thank you for including me.
Okay, then. Thank you for listening in.
Well, we always love people listening in. Mr. Bauer, so the old saying, your first term, you're just learning, and there's nothing you can do. How true is that?
It's not really true at all. During my first term, during my first 2 years in the Congress, I led the effort to successfully repeal the Clinton gun ban, primarily from my position on the Judiciary Committee and as the chairman of the Speaker's Firearms Legislation Task Force, to which I've been appointed by Speaker Gingrich. I authored and successfully saw enacted the Defense of Marriage Act, and this was during my first 2 years. So, you know, if a member of Congress, a freshman, chooses their issues wisely, doesn't try and do everything at once, chooses their issues wisely, those issues to push for and lead on that they have the background and the credibility to be involved in. In my case, issues before the Judiciary Committee, they can accomplish a lot. So this notion that, well, you can't get anything done your first term up there, it depends on what it is you want to get done and how focused you are in directing your energies.
That's one of the things I've always been said. You know, everyone says, well, why don't you go in after this issue, that issue? I said, you got to pick your fights. You know, you pick the fight and go for the one that you got the best chance of winning just to make your point. You know, you can't go after every single solitary issue.
No, we each have certain backgrounds and certain skills that it makes sense for us to champion certain issues, and you maximize your chance for success on particular issues if you choose them wisely. You know, as you say, don't just go after everything and don't go chasing issues just because they sound good. Chase those that make sense from your background, your committee, your preferences, and where you develop the credibility to really press an issue.
Is it me, or did it seem like many media chambers that you knew disagreed enjoyed having you as a guest because they enjoyed that not only disagreement but kind of a challenging discussion? To whereas a lot of times now it just seems like Fox will only have the people that agree and MSNBC will have the only people that agree. Same thing with ABC and NBC. To whereas we're just losing that it's okay to disagree, or even in many ways Bill O'Reilly likes to bring in the opposite opinion for that combative discussion that really accomplishes a lot more than sitting there and agreeing all the time.
It's gotten very difficult to be on these programs nowadays on cable and really have any chance at all to get a substantive discussion going and sustained. I found with virtually almost every one of the programs that really became popular in the 1990s, including those on Fox, there's an inverse relationship between the popularity and the viewership of those programs and the quality of discourse. So a lot of these programs, when they're new, when the networks are new, and when the hosts are new, they're willing to let their guests actually say something without interrupting them, without talking over them. They actually want to engage in a substantive discussion. And then as the program becomes and the host becomes more and more popular, then the show becomes more and more just about them, not about their guests. And I think we've seen way too much of that with the cable programs in recent years. It's very unfortunate.
Did you have any favorite shows you'd like to be on and interviewed, and where you felt I'll be able
say
to
this one.
get this message across?
Well,
we know
it's,
we're
it's,
number one.
You know, relatively different with radio, but the cable shows, the one that I used to enjoy back when they actually had it on CNN was Crossfire. I always enjoyed that show because even the liberal host, which for quite some time was Bill Press, he was a very nice person. We got along fine off the air. And you could actually engage in some substance with him and Pat Buchanan or Mary Madeline on the other side. I also enjoyed initially when he first started his show, Bill O'Reilly. I always found initially to be a very nice host, very polite, gave you a chance to say things. So it's still very worthwhile being on a lot of these shows, but they're not nearly as enjoyable as they used to be honest with you.
Yeah, and we were discussing this last week on the show about civility in society, and unfortunately we've gotten away from that. You know, kids today no longer say thank you, yes sir, yes ma'am, someone goes walking into a store, you've got someone maybe half a step behind you, they don't stop to hold the door open. You know, the politeness, decorum, civility, and when we end up into debates with cross opinions, you know, one side screaming at the other, and no one's trying to find the center where they at least can agree in something.
You're correct. Again, which points out how important it is for your program here and others like it across the country to, you know, continue to fill in those gaps and provide that that substantive constitutional dialogue that's so important. I've got to run here, but I really, really do enjoy being with you all and have enjoyed it and look forward to it again. Hopefully in the near future you'll have me back on.
You are welcome. Absolutely. Back on any time, Congressman.
Thank you.
Thank
you all take
you so
care
much,
and keep pressing the Constitution. Make sure people understand it and don't forget it.
Before
you
go,
sir.
Congressman, my advice mm-hmm. to you, give them hell. Give them hell.
I don't know any other way.
That's amen. Former Congressman Abdar, wow, and I remember him on Crossfire. That was a great show. I spent a lot of time in our historian room at high school popping in those old VHS tapes, just watching. The Crossfire with Pat Buchanan was always the best. He was just super, super awesome. I always liked him. But anyway, that was great. What a great interview, Annie. I mean, just...
Yes, it is. It's always a pleasure to have someone of his caliber, because the interview basically does itself. You just end up sitting back and enjoying it, and I love it. I love it. I mean, that was Congressman Bob Barr. His website is bobbarr.org. I urge everyone to check on it. He's also up on Twitter as Bob Barr, and he's also up in Facebook as Bob Barr. So he's making use of the social media. Wow, that was a great, great interview. And if anyone wants to call in and talk with us, our call-in line is open. It's 917-889-3675. And I want to remind everyone we do have a brand-new website, which is southernsense.webs, W-E-B-S, southernsense.webs.com. And we've got a contest going on there to win the video DVD of Todd Allen Herndon, his video, My Name is America. So I urge everyone to go on there. You know, Mike, I came across this thing someone sent me. I think it was our friend James Tapscott out in the Ramona Tea Party. It's a picture of George Washington, and it's a quote of his. And this is something everyone, because there's conversation going up in the chat room about firearm possession. A free people ought not only be armed and disciplined, but they should have sufficient arms and ammunition to maintain a status of independence from any who might attempt to abuse them, which would include their own government. This is George Washington, and this is about your Second Amendment. Wow, what a powerful quote.
It certainly is. Annie, since he did break, I uploaded. I have two clips I want to play real quick. I think make good discussion pieces.
Okay, go ahead.
If you don't mind it. Buckle up your chin straps, people. Here is our President of the United States.
It's not just the job of our military alone. We must all do our part to make sure our God-given rights are protected here at home. That includes one of the most fundamental rights of a democracy, the right to vote. Well, when any American, no matter where they live or what their party, are denied that right, because they can't afford to wait for 5 or 6 or 7 hours just to cast their ballot, we are betraying our ideals. So, tonight I'm announcing a nonpartisan commission to improve the voting experience in America, and it definitely needs improvement. I'm asking two longtime experts in the field who, by the way, recently served as the top attorneys for my campaign and for Governor Romney's campaign, to lead it. We can fix this, and we will. The American people demand it, and so does our democracy.
With the exception of broken machines. Where in the hell in this planet does it take you 7 hours to vote? What bullshit. He is such a liar.
Only at the voting places that had the Black Panthers in front. You know, why don't you take the Black Panthers away from the front of the voting poll, and maybe people will go in and vote. You know, maybe you should prosecute these Black Panthers that prevented people from voting.
This is the thing, too, Annie, is that there are so many ways of voting. And, yeah, there probably needs to be adjustments into some of the systems. But they have early voting, absentee vote. This is such a bull crap. 5, 6, and then he jumps to 7 hours. There's a huge difference between those time zones, by the way. Okay. He points out that this lady at 102 years old, people helped her to vote, and that's great. Failing to mention that this lady probably has 5 alternative methods of voting where she doesn't even have to leave the house, which is great. I'm a poll person, too. I like to go to the polls. I think it's a great tradition in our country. But, 5, 6, and 7 hours.
No, after he did that speech, I did have the article last week with me on Friday. I don't have it with me now, so I can't tell you exactly who did this. But after he made that speech, immediately after, they went and fact-checked what he said. And there was a place in Florida that did have long lines and long waits. But it was the exception to the rule. It was just one or two locations. It wasn't all over the country as he wants you to make you believe. You know, simply because you say it does not make it the truth. But that's what they're doing. The more they tell the lies, the more they make you think they are telling the truth. You know, Mr. President, stop lying.
Well, I don't think he knows any other way but lying. So here's another 7 hours to vote. I'd love a town hall with President Obama, too. Here's President Obama again. And, you know, they ought to call it just state of chaos instead of state of the union. Here we go.
To grow our middle class, our citizens have to have access to the education and training that today's jobs require. But we also have to make sure that America remains a place where everybody who's willing to work hard has the chance to get ahead. Our economy is stronger when we harness the talents and ingenuity of striving, hopeful immigrants. And right now, leaders from the business, labor, law enforcement, faith communities, they all agree that the time has come to pass comprehensive immigration reform. Now's the time to do it. Now's the time to get it done. Now's the time to get it done. Real reform means stronger border security, and we can build on the progress my administration's already made, putting more boots on the southern border than at any time in our history, and reducing illegal crossings to their lowest levels in 40 years. Real reform means establishing a responsible pathway to earned citizenship, a path that includes passing a background check, paying taxes and a meaningful penalty, learning English, and going to the back of the line behind the folks trying to come here legally. And real reform means fixing the legal immigration system to cut waiting periods and attract the highly skilled entrepreneurs and engineers that will help create jobs and grow our economy.
Oh, Annie, is this a Tea Party talking here?
While you were playing that clip, I just went and I told everyone I bought the Neat Desk, that thing that scanner they show on TV. This thing is wonderful. And I have the article from the previous one on voting lines. It was Eric Schorn who wrote the article for Fox News. And let's see. He has voters in 5 states reported voting more than 20 minutes waiting. 6 states notched an average of less than 5 minutes. Los Angeles County waited only 3.5 minutes, and Vermont voters were the luckiest. They reported only a 2-minute wait. So he completely debunked this crap that he talked about long lines. What Obama was citing is a 102-year-old woman, Desaline Victor, who waited in line for hours. You know, if you've got someone that's disabled or handicapped, yet, I can understand because, number one, people may not know that this person is disabled or handicapped and needs assistance or something like that. But let's see. Bill Nelson in Florida has called for a new bill called the Line Act, which is to limit time waits because he said some people were waiting just under an hour, and that was too long to wait to vote, 1 hour. But think back to the people in Iraq after they got their freedom from Saddam Hussein that got there and waited 12 hours to vote, So we're inconvenienced by a few minutes, so it makes it a national disaster. But the people in Iraq who finally have their freedom wait 12 hours, and they don't mind. Where does it make common sense here?
It makes no common sense. I mean, that, like you said, he had said people waiting 5, 6, and then he extends it to 7 hours to make it seem as if 50% of the country. My brother and I waited about an hour, and he did nothing but complain the whole damn time. This is ridiculous. He's just your standard Democrat who's, just totally clueless on the issue. But my whole point is, how long did it take people in our first election to get to the polls? It took them a lot longer than that just to get to the polls, let alone vote, and for us to count the votes. And in an electronic age, I'm sure there's some adjustments we need to make. But this is just – when a president gives a State of the Union and over half of it is outright lies, as much as we don't like President Obama's views, we try to extend respect because he is our president. But when he's just so full of bullshit, I mean, it's just not even remotely – it's an outright lie, and he knows it. And he does it with utter contempt and disregard for the State of the Union, which is written to address in the third, I believe, the third or fourth, whatever. It's written that the president will address Congress. It really brings degradation to the most important office in the history of this planet as far as political office.
Well, not only that, the State of the Union was not a State of the Union address. What he was doing was saying, what I want to do in the future, what I want the nation to do, the way I want to push the nation. It wasn't talking about the situation that we are currently in and what we could do to bring ourselves out of it. It was another campaign speech. And there was nothing in there. There was nothing in there of substance that was telling us what the State of the Union was. What is our situation?
You're wrong. He said it's strong, and the recession's in the rearview mirror. Did you hear him? It's our state is strong. He don't live in Michigan. I don't want to get in trouble, but everyone can read my mind and my frustration right now. And then, we play this immigration piece. Who was this talking? Who? This is not President Obama. Learning English, getting into the back of the line, that was not Barack Obama. I mean, he could have introduced that a week into office, and all of us would have supported this.
I think that speech came straight out of La Raza.
Oh, my goodness. Learning English, is that Barack Obama talking?
No, Mike, you've said I've been too nice. Was that okay?
La Raza, yeah. All right, here, one more. No, actually, two more. I lost the one I really wanted to play where it's before he got elected, where he's just going at McCain talking about all the violations of the Constitution and how we need to treasure this Constitution. And this is a quick 30-second piece. If there was any – just listen.
For all service members and equal benefits for their families, gay and straight. We will draw upon the courage and skills of our sisters and daughters and moms because women have proven under fire that they are ready for combat. We will keep faith with our veterans investing in world-class care, including mental health care, for our wounded warriors.
Okay. Given the fact that our military leaders can pick and choose whoever is in their platoon or their squads, male or female, the ending of that is very close to us, to our heart.
Right. Because we do work with the Independence Fund that helps wounded veterans from the Iraq and Afghanistan wars.
I mean, when you make that statement, when it is an outright lie, when so many of our service members come back and are killing themselves, they're lost, they're confused, and we are not there. The government, yes, the government has an obligation to take care of those people. In the old Soviet Union days, veterans were revered, even in the communistic, with their retirees, the way they treated these people. But yet we bring them home, and we basically say goodbye.
Absolutely. And a lot of them have to fight just to get their, you know, disability pensions or whatever. The VA is woefully inadequate in helping them. And Dr. Jones was in the chat room earlier, and he's starting to work with a group of Marines that are helping the veterans coming home. We work with the Independence Fund, which people can go to independencefund.org and check them out. You know, it's the private sector that is doing more to help the veterans than the government. And on top of which, we got sequestration occurring next month, which is going to gut the military. And who came up with the idea of sequestration? The Obama White House, and they're blaming it on Republicans. We didn't call for it. He did. He wanted it in the bill. It went in the bill, and now he's going, oh, my goodness, you know, the goal line is here, and we're going to fumble the ball. And, yes, they are fumbling the ball greatly. They're going to lose 20,000 Marines with sequestration. They already have turned around and said to the ones in the combat front line, we're not serving you hot breakfast anymore. You have to eat MREs because the budget is just not there. You've got civilians in the military serving that are going to be losing their jobs because of sequestration. And, hey, he's there in his speech calling for more support of the military when he's the one that's gutting the system. Where is the logic in this?
Well, it's like I said, I mean, the whole speech dissected. You can always, and it doesn't matter who is your president, you can always pull out certain clips and find that they're kind of extending the truth, or they're being a little advertising or sales pitch here. But when the whole damn thing is just outright, since when in all of his years alive as a politician has he said one of the requirements to become citizens should be learning English? He has never, ever, ever in the history of Barack Obama ever said that. I mean, that you're just outright just lying. All right, here's my last clip before I actually go crazy here and hang myself in there in my little office there. Here's our president.
Responsible young families from buying their first home. What's holding us back? Let's streamline the process and help our economy grow. Now, these initiatives in manufacturing, energy, infrastructure, housing, all these things will help entrepreneurs and small business owners expand and create new jobs. But none of it will matter unless we also equip our citizens with the skills and training to fill those jobs. And that has to start at the earliest possible age. You know, study after study shows that the sooner a child begins learning, the better he or she does down the road. But today, fewer than 3 in 10 4-year-olds are enrolled in a high-quality preschool program. Most middle-class parents can't afford a few hundred bucks a week for a private preschool. And for poor kids who need help the most, this lack of access to preschool education can shadow them for the rest of their lives. So tonight, I propose working with states to make high-quality preschool available to every single child in America. That's something we should be able to do.
Oh, great. Indoctrinate the kids from the age of 4 until they graduate from college that the government's going to pay for, and they're going to forgive any college loans you have. So the longer you are in possession of government education, the more you are going to be beholden and brainwashed by government education.
You just stole my entire spiel afterwards, Annie. Thank you very much. But yeah, correct me if I'm wrong. Was he let me put it in layperson terms. Was he basically saying the state, meaning the state government, funded schools? Really? Like you said, indoctrination. Hey, let's not wait. 4 years old, they're too old. Let's not wait till they're five.
Well, we keep them while they're still in the womb before we end up aborting them.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to end up doing a DNA test to see whether or not that child being born is going to be a conservative or progressive. If it's progressive, you're allowed to live. If it's a conservative, you're out of here. Coming to a state near you.
Well, what? Jesus. Coming to a state near you. I mean, all right.
It's mind-boggling.
I played these clips, okay? Now, anyone can play devil's advocate, okay? Because we all know my opinion. But, okay, help me here. Where is it, okay, he's throwing in these federally funded schools or state-run, which are basically include the federal government will mandate their agenda, what they'll teach or how they'll do indoctrinate, whatever. And then, of course, he's talking about the federal government's involved in homes and
What part of our life are they not involved in at this point?
Yes, exactly.
It's every living, breathing part of our life. Speaking of which, on Friday's show, coming up, same bat time, same bat station, people, we're going to have David Hoberg, who is an expert on Obamacare. He's from FreedomWorks, and he'll be joining us on Friday. So, you know, Mike, this show has gone really fast, fast. We've had a great chat room out there. I want to thank everyone that participated and want to thank everyone that's been calling in to listen. We appreciate you, and we had a wonderful guest. Can't thank Congressman Barr enough. And, Mike, as always,
you're aces. Oh, yeah, thank you, Annie. Just so you know, my crowd, where I'm here for the first time in a long time in the cafe, they said free donuts while they last. So everybody left and went to next door to get the free damn donuts. They abandoned us for day old bread and donuts. But anyway, it has been great. And you know, Annie, I'll tell you, it's like each passing week, each one of our guests that we had on in the previous show, what they say makes more and more sense. Almost when you grow up, you know, you have all this information in your brain floating around that this uncle, this parent, this neighbor said to you, and you're thinking, what an idiot. Or, as you get older and you realize so much of that is true, here, you know, each one of our guests, look at what President Obama said and listen to what Chuck Woolery told us, you know, 3 weeks or a month ago. I mean, this is exactly falling in line.
Yeah, and actually next week, I got a new friend of ours, Captain Black. He has a website called the Social Network of African American Conservatives and Moderates. It's moveonup.org. He's going to be on next week, I believe Tuesday. I will be putting that up on our website, which is southernsense.webs.com. Tell you, go out there, join our new system. And we have someone, Doc Vag, the upper levels of the Matrix systems are now legally collapsed. The government has been foreclosed on. Okay, we'll take a look at that. He's got a Blog Talk Radio show over there. Okay, great. Post that up in the chat room for everyone else to see. And if anyone else has a show, you can post it up. We're not egotistical. So, Mike.
No, not too much, but we will talk on Friday. Tonight, Sarge and I and Jermaine and Monica are going to talk. We're going to talk something. I don't know what we're going to talk, but we have a show at 11:30 p.m.
Okay. Well, until then, we'll see everyone back on Friday. Same bat time, same bat station. So I have a healthy,
happy... Wait a minute, Annie. Wait a minute. I got to say one more thing.
Yes?
For a lady who woke up 15 minutes before the show, you didn't do half bad today.
Okay. Good night, everyone, and see you
Good night,
here on Friday. So have a safe and healthy week.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble.
You've been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.webs.com. Southern Sense is a proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network. Southern Sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
American.